Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories that I'll be looking into on today's program. Strive for unity. Pope Benedict urges the faithful to persevere along the path towards Christian unity at his weekly general audience. Discussions on Davos. Cardinal McCarrick shares with us his insights on the key issues being discussed at the World Economic Forum in the Swiss resort of Davos. And Up With Life. We take a look at the Church's pro-life campaign in the US as the nation marks the anniversary of the Supreme Court ruling that legalized abortion. Ecumenism was the theme of Pope Benedict's catechesis at his weekly general audience, as Christians around the world are marking the centenary of the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity. Chris Altieri picks up the details.
Pope Benedict XVI held his weekly general audience today in Paul VI Hall. This week's general audience took place in the midst of the Octave of Prayer for Christian Unity. Pope Benedict XVI said, "During this week, Christ's faithful throughout the whole world, in all churches and ecclesial communities, ask for the grace of unity and commit themselves to work tirelessly so that the whole world welcomes Christ as the true shepherd and the one Lord."
When Christians from various communities come together to pray in common, they acknowledge that unity cannot be achieved by human strength alone. Only by relying on God's grace can they live according to Jesus' prayer, that they may all be one.
Pope Benedict also discussed the special significance of this week of prayer for Christian unity, which marks the 100th anniversary of the initiative's founding.
This week, Christians throughout the world celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity, initiated by Father Paul Watson, founder of the Society of the Atonement. The theme chosen for this year is St. Paul's exhortation to Thessalonians to pray always. According to the Second Vatican Council, prayer and holiness of life are the soul of the whole ecumenical movement.
The Holy Father called on Christians everywhere to give thanks for ecumenical achievements and to persevere on the path that leads to unity.
I therefore invite all Christians to render fitting thanks to Almighty God for the progress that shifts us for along the path of ecumenism, and to persevere as we strive toward unity, so that the world may believe that Jesus is the only Son sent by the Father.
Following his catechesis, the Pope greeted the faithful in many languages, including English.
I extend a cordial welcome to the English-speaking pilgrims present to this audience, including students and staff from St. Mary's High School in Sydney, and members of a delegation from the Los Angeles Council of Religious Leaders. May God bestow abundant blessings upon all of you.
The Week of Prayer for Christian Unity concludes on Friday, January 25th, the Feast of the Conversion of St. Paul. Pope Benedict is scheduled to mark the occasion with ecumenical vespers at Rome's Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls. I'm Chris Altieri.
An official with the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity is Monsignor Donald Bolan, who is involved in dialogue with Anglicans and Methodists. He outlined for us some events of ecumenical importance occurring later on this year.
The most significant event coming up in 2008 is without doubt the Lambeth Conference, which brings together Anglican bishops from all over the world. In the past 3 or 4 years, there have been serious internal tensions within Anglicanism concerning human sexuality and concerning structures of authority with which to address those tensions. The Lambeth Conference hopes to address these issues And the Anglican bishops, under the leadership of the Archbishop of Canterbury, hope to work towards an Anglican covenant. And if they're able to achieve this, this would seriously assist us ecumenically insofar as it would strengthen the internal coherence of the Anglican Communion. From a Catholic perspective, we are always saying that we need to know where our dialogue partner stands. And any strengthening of the internal bonds of within the Anglican Communion, which are also a strengthening of the apostolic faith, would certainly support our ecumenical relations.
That was Monsignor Donald Bolan of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity. Economic Forum is meeting this week in the Swiss resort of Davos to discuss the most pressing issues facing our planet. They include climate change, poverty and inequality, declining natural resources, economic insecurity and terrorism. Key corporate decision makers, political leaders, including the US Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and representatives from the media, religions, the arts, and civil society are attending. This year, the main theme of the five-day gathering in Davos is the power of collaborative innovation. Among the participants at the forum is Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, the Archbishop Emeritus of Washington. I caught up with him just before he headed to Davos and asked him to explain the significance of this year's main theme.
I believe that in the past forums, we've been looking more at disparate attempts to bring people together. And I think that the focus now is to see how we can work together more, how we can find ways of building bridges that will bring us all together. One of the important new initiatives of the forum, which has just begun, I think probably last year, was this group of a community of religious leaders who are taking the challenge of relations between Islam and the West and looking to see how we can build bridges, how we can get understanding, and how we can be collaborative in working out our problems. I think this is something that I see in Davos, and that I think many of us are anxious to work in. Now, of course, there are many people who will be talking about the new adventures in business and new collaboration among companies and things like that. And that, of course, is always fascinating for those who can understand the intricacies of that world. But on the other hand, this is something new, and this has just begun within the last few years, and now it has really become a standard at Davos, a group of religious leaders getting together to talk about how we can make a difference and how religion can make a difference. There are a number of the four of the small group gatherings here that are going to be talking about getting people together, talking about spirituality in business, ethics in religious life. There's a talk on I'm giving on the two young presidents of institutions, these people in their 30s and 40s, and talking about spirituality and how that will be a motivation and should be not only a motivation but a criterion of their work and their success. So I think there's a collaboration in innovation to find new ways that we can work together is the theme that all of us here are looking at and are promoting.
If I can pick up on what you said, you talked about this meeting with religious leaders, with other religious leaders, and how you can make a difference. Well, can you perhaps answer that question for me? What ideas do you have for how you can make a difference in the world of business, in the world of politics, among the movers and shakers of our planet?
Well, I think one of the ways, and this is becomes more and more obvious as we get together, one of the ways is to see that in the world of ethics, we are reasonably close together. not only the great religions of the West, but the religions of the East as well. We are together in saying that you have to be honest. You have to give someone a fair shake. You have to. The religions are saying you have to worry about the poor. You have to worry about globalization, say, with a conscience, that globalization with a human face. I think that these ideas of business, that business can't go without doing something that has its morality, that has its ethics. The Holy Father, in his special message, speaks about this. He says there are no discussions of temporal realities can prescind from the ethical questions that are an intrinsic part of these realities, and of course they are involved in our religious values, and the fact that these business leaders seem now willing to discuss religious values and to make it a part of the World Economic Forum, I think is a good thing.
Some critics, however, have argued that the World Economic Forum at Davos is merely a talking shop for the rich and powerful that doesn't really deliver in terms of concrete measures on policy changes for solving our world's problems. Is this a fair criticism in your view?
Well, I think some parts of it is, but I think when you look at any organization in the world that is part of the material sphere, we're always going to know that the test of the pudding is in the tasting, so that you have to put plans together, you have to put ideas together, and then you have to see what you do with these. Now, whether the World Economic Forum should be criticized because it does not take active roles later on, I'm not sure if that's fair. If this is a group that gets together and comes up with good ideas, then hopefully others are going to have to take these good ideas and put them into practice. So if you criticize a group like the think tanks all around the world, if you criticize the think tanks because they're thinking and not acting, that doesn't seem to be fair.
When I went on to the website for the World Economic Forum, it talked about leadership vacuums on a wide range of critical issues facing our global community. What do you believe are some of these critical issues? And do you agree with this diagnosis of a leadership vacuum on it?
Well, when you look at the need to have a more dialogue, more constructive dialogue between the West and Islam, I think this would be one of the most important questions that you would want to ask. When you look at globalization today and how it obviously has some very important and necessary elements to it because of the changing world economic situation, but you also see that you need to have more consideration of how globalization can be ethically organized, how globalization cannot forget the poor, how globalization can make sure that as it moves forward, it gives all the countries in the third world a chance also to shine and to grow and to develop. I think these are the things that are important for us to do. Now, is there a vacuum of leadership? Well, there may be a vacuum of will. I think the great minds are there, but do they understand how they have to do this? Or is it sometimes too overwhelming that then people just begin to develop their own neck of the woods, as we say here in the United States? But do you have a vacuum? We always have a vacuum. But does that mean you have no leaders? No, it doesn't. It means that it would be wonderful to have more people who had their ethics in the right place, who had their religious values in the right place, who had their understanding of spirituality, and would take it into the marketplace. I think this is the real challenge when you of us religious people who are at the World Economic Forum and any other group, even the United Nations. So we have to try to make sure that the world does not forget that one of the most important factors that you have to deal with is religion and spirituality and ethical values which follow that.
Right, you talked there a lot about religion and spirituality. Coming back to this fact of interreligious dialogue, and particularly between the Catholic Church and Muslims. As you know, there's going to be a meeting coming up in the Vatican in the coming months, because these are two religions that represent more than half of the world's planet. Are you going to be trying to make a special effort to seek out your Muslim colleagues at Davos?
Well, I always do that. I've been privileged in having the privilege of being in the Middle East and have gotten to know a lot of the Muslim leaders and consider them as friends. So I will be looking forward to seeing them and to trying to move them along the road of collaboration, the road of deeper understanding, and the road of loving each other. This is what the Lord asked us to do. I'm delighted that the Holy See is moving in this direction. I think that is a good sign. The Holy Father has always been open to this, and I think it's great that there is something in the offing, which will be a chance for Catholic leaders and leaders of Islam to sit down together and see how we can begin to build the bridges that we need. Because, as you say, if we do not find mutual words to use, we talk about the common word, our brothers and sisters in Islam are talking about coming to a common word. Unless we find a vocabulary that helps us to talk to each other and with honesty, with frankness, with openness, and with love, the world is headed for difficult days in the future.
I was talking there to Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, Archbishop Emeritus of Washington. In the US, thousands of pro-life campaigners have staged a march to Washington's Supreme Court. It's an annual event organized by the U.S. Catholic bishops that commemorates the anniversary of the 1973 Roe v. Wade ruling by the Supreme Court that legalized abortion nationwide. The Catholic Church has long been one of the key voices speaking up for the rights of the unborn child. Cardinal Theodore McCarrick is the Archbishop Emeritus of Washington, and he spoke to me about the importance of this annual pro-life rally.
Well, of course, one of the most important things for us here in Washington, because we see these thousands and thousands of people coming, is the fact that the people of the United States have not given up on getting rid of this terrible scourge of abortion. When you see the huge crowds of young people, especially at the masses and in the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception here in Washington, and they come and they sing and they are very much people for life. It is this which gives us hope for the future, and so I think that as I look back on the millions and millions of babies whose lives have been destroyed, we have to have hope for the future. We have to look to the future and realize that our young people have not given up this cause. We don't know what the election will bring in November. We don't know what that will mean for the United States and its policies. But we do know this, that there are young people in the United States who have not given up the fight against abortion, the fight for life, and that is what gives us confidence.
Just ahead of this key anniversary in the pro-life calendar in the US, a new report showed that the number of abortions in America fell to 1.2 million in 2005. But despite the decline in the number of pregnancy terminations over the past few years, overall there have been roughly 50 million abortions in the United States since the Roe ruling in 1973. More than one-third of adult women are estimated to have had at least one termination. And surveys show that in 2005, over one in five pregnancies ended in abortion. A prominent pro-life campaigner in the US is Father Frank Pavone.
director of the organisation Priests for Life, that seeks to promote the Church's teachings in favour of life. He told me that despite being legalised 35 years ago, the practice of abortion remains a sensitive and polarising issue in the US that often takes centre stage in the nation's politics.
Although this procedure has been legal in America since 1973 throughout all 9 months of pregnancy, it still has not settled in to the American landscape, into the conscience of people. The fact that it's still making headlines, is still a key point of debate among the candidates, is a very good sign that the people are still very much aware that this is something that should not be tolerated.
Are you hopeful that ultimately the Roe versus Wade ruling that legalized abortion in the U.S. will be overturned in the near future?
I'm completely confident that it will be reversed even sooner than many of us anticipate, because we already see it being eroded. It has been eroded and weakened by some Supreme Court decisions, including the one in 2007 in April regarding partial birth abortion. It continues to be eroded in public opinion. People in America have never agreed with a policy that allows abortion throughout all 9 months of pregnancy. And the more they recognize that that, in fact, is what Roe v. Wade unleashed on us as a society, the more they oppose it. I had the pleasure some 9 years ago of receiving into the Catholic Church Norma McCorvey, who was the Jane Roe of this Roe v. Wade decision, and her conversion is a symbol of really what is happening in every segment of our society.
But despite, as you say, this growing opposition towards abortion, I mean, it is a very common practice. According to a recent U.S. survey, worldwide, one in five pregnancies ends in abortion. I mean, these are really high figures, aren't they?
Yes, it's a very, very alarming. And that's one of the things that we use educationally to wake people up about this issue, because people are uniformly very alarmed at the statistics, even those who call themselves pro-choice. And when you put together the frequency of it with the statistics showing how common it is, one of the only explanations is simply this, that while most people believe it's wrong, they believe it's a private wrong. Yes, I'm pro-life, I would never have an abortion, but if somebody else has one, that's none of my business. One of the things we work to do through the church and through the pro-life movement is to help people understand it is their business, just like helping the poor, the drug addicted, those dying of AIDS, those in war-torn parts of the world. It is our business to help the unborn and their parents, because ours is the business of love.
When it comes to abortion, one could argue that in the US there's much more perhaps awareness. It's a more contentious issue, say, that compared to Europe. Political candidates talk about it. Their pro-life views are courted, or shall we say, at least they're looked at. Yet at the same time, looking at this same survey, it said that in Western Europe they're 23 abortions for every 100 live births, whilst in North America there are 33 abortions for every 100 live births. Why is it higher? Why are there more abortions going on in North America compared to Europe, when it is a more religious nation?
As you point out, it is much more contentious in America. And one of the reasons for that is not only that the pro-life movement is more highly organized, is more diversified. There are many more groups doing so many different things. But it's also because the abortion industry is much more aggressive. And that is one of the factors that accounts for these higher abortion rates. The abortion industry in the United States has a very, very aggressive, well-coordinated, well-funded marketing campaign, public relations efforts. Those who work in the abortion clinics as counselors, they are trained on how to sell an abortion. These groups are very politically active. And unlike in many other countries, where if a pro-life doctor, for example, wanted to go into an abortion clinic and offer alternatives, the clinic will often welcome such doctors. In America, they can't get near the front door. So it's a much, much more high-tension operation. And with all that marketing and advertising, this accounts for a lot of these higher numbers.
Priests for Life was, of course, founded with the express aim of promoting the pro-life teachings of the Church. Is it at times a rather uphill struggle? And if not, can you share with us some of perhaps you see as your greatest advancements or triumphs?
Well, in one way, time has been on our side and continues to be in this sense, that the more the years go on, the more we're finding priests who grew up with the pro-life movement and in many cases found their vocation through the pro-life movement. That makes our job easier because when we stand in front of a group of priests to give them a seminar or when we sit with them one-on-one in their rectories or are invited to preach in their pulpits, these are priests who are already on fire for the pro-life cause. They know the terminology of the movement, and they're ready to receive the kind of encouragement and resources we give them and the fellowship that we have with them. So that is, my work is much easier today than it was when I started back in 1993, for that reason. We have also, because of our visibility throughout the United States especially, but increasingly around the world, we're able to get through more open doors in terms, for example, of meeting with our government officials, talking with people, even on the other side of this issue. And one of the great advances we've made is to be able to have some high-level dialogues with people who are and have been abortion advocates and abortionists. In this way, we not only get a lot of interesting and helpful information, but we are showing forth that dialogue of salvation that the Church always speaks of and that Jesus himself showed as he ate with the tax collectors and the sinners.
I know you also work in other countries. Turning, for instance, to the UK, which last year marked the 40th anniversary of the passing of its abortion law there, yet in that time, the number of abortions in Britain has increased tenfold. So something's going wrong, isn't it? Why are so many abortions being performed?
Yes, and the very legality of abortion increases the numbers. In every country where it's legalized, you see this phenomenon because people are generally unwilling to break the law. And the abortion advocates like to say that if we make it illegal, women are going to do everything they need to do. They'll crawl over broken glass in order to get the abortions. That does not prove to be true when, for example, even laws that make it more difficult to get abortion, although not prohibiting it, are introduced in various areas. We see the numbers actually go down and women tending to choose life. So the very legality of it is the primary factor that opens the door for more people to say, hey, this is an option, maybe I should use it, and for other people to pressure them into doing it. Because the first thing we need to make clear about abortion is it's not a matter of freedom of choice for these women. It's a matter of people who feel they have no freedom and no choice. And when everyone around them is saying your only choice is abortion and pushing them in that direction precisely because, hey, this is a legal option, we find then that that the numbers skyrocket every place where it's made available.
That was Father Frank Pavone, director of the organization Priests for Life. And you also heard the voice of Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, Archbishop Emeritus of Washington. That's all from us here at the English programme for today, but we hope you have enjoyed listening to us. We'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. And don't forget, you can always find our programmes at any time of the day or the night by clicking on our website. That's www.vaticanradio.org. We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions, so send us an email. Laudato Jesus Christus.